For example, this year we're targeting reading at the third and fifth grade level, but I would hope that as two evolutions of the quality ed model that I can see, one evolution is that we also know that for some kids it's going to take more resources for them to learn to read at grade level or to do mathematics at grade level. And so I one of the future conversations I've heard the folks that have worked on the quality ed model, the actual data and statistics, is that at some point we're going to be able to say, if this student is reading below grade, 2 years below grade level, or doing mathematics 2 years below grade level, it will probably cost X to help that student be able to move up to grade level. Or if a student is an English language learner, and depending on what level of English language learner that student is, we can begin to determine how much it's going to cost or project forward in a much more thoughtful way than, and so it we'll be investing in our children, literally, in that way. And I think we're probably 2 to 4 years out from being able to do that successfully. I think this coming biennium, with the investment the governor has requested for reading, will be a very important first step in understanding what happens with that investment. Do we really make the strides that we intend to make? I mean, we'll have very good data by the end of this biennium to know just where our students are at third and fifth grade level and what schools were able to do through the database initiative effort. We'll know how schools are targeting their resources, and we can look at what is the relationship between targeting their resources at an X level to the number of students that they have reading on grade level. And it's the first time we'll have that kind of concrete data. And I think that, you know, as I say that, we also know there are wonderful and strange things that happen in the learning process that isn't measured just by dollars and resources. And so we've got to take that into account as well. But I do think that the quality ed model is a great budgeting tool for us to be able to have as a place to understand what is our investment to close the achievement gap and how are we doing. And I think that it has the potential of a very, very fine future in that.
Kate, you've said a couple things there that I thank you for, because I've given so much thought this last 6 months about how we can improve the quality of education within our limited resources. And you've heard me say in my Senate district, I have portions of Portland, Beaverton, and Hillsborough, and those three districts now represent about 100,000 students.
Correct.
And Hillsborough and Beaverton are about the same size as Portland. But the achievement is so different in each one of those three districts that I'm really concerned about how we are going to get, for instance, Portland to achieve at the same rate that Beaverton does. And it's more, of course, than just putting money to it. It's more than just getting parents involved. And I do believe that we're all coming to the conclusion that the teachers are certainly the most important people in the building. But and as people come to me and say, hey, 5.2 is not enough now. Portland's got to cut 20 million, Beaverton 10, and Hillsborough 5. And you just mentioned the QEM, and if we use the complete QEM formula, if we had the resources, we'd put $1 billion more in K through 12. Well, I tell you, we wouldn't get $1 billion improvement in quality. And so that's what really concerns me. How do we grow into the QEM model, the financing part, and at the same time improve the quality of education? For instance, in the Beaverton District, Superintendent Katz says, hey, we have no trouble with the third and fifth graders. They do well. It's the intermediate school kids. Can we use those funds that are in the budget? And as I understand it, yes, they can.
Yes, they can.
Yeah, and my Jefferson High School, they've got so many young people coming there as freshmen in high school, can't read, period. I mean, they're not reading at a seventh grade level. It's reading at such a low grade level, and boy, I'm not discouraged, but we have an enormous task in front of us, and it's not just a matter of more money, of course.
Well, Senator Hartung, I really agree with you about the enormity of the task ahead of us. For me, the hope is, and the silver lining around this cloud, is that we're paying attention to it now. We have not always, in our with our large school district responsibilities, I think we've always been willing to accept the fact that we have some schools that are high-performing schools, and we have some schools that are low-performing schools. And what I see the state willing to take on at this stage of the game, as well as our local school districts, is attention to the fact that not all children are achieving and doing well and going on to college, that we have a certain percentage of our kids that are not successful in our schools. We have a lot of kids that are successful. And, you know, it's one of those things where you want to balance it and assure people that our schools, for many kids, are just fine. But we have a group of students who, for a whole range of reasons, all the way from whether learning disabled or just not fitting in with where they are to a variety of issues that are causing them not to do well in school. And I believe one of the things we're doing here in Oregon is we're shining a light on that. Mm-hmm. And we're basically saying to educate well 75% of our students and know that we're going to somehow not do very well with 25% of our students is no longer acceptable. And I would say that's really where we are, is that we are beginning to really take on tough challenges around children that we've allowed to leave our schools either by dropping out or graduating with minimal skills. And we're basically saying we're going to hold all of our children to learning and accomplishing higher skills. Now, having said all that, it is a very challenging issue. And I think that some school districts, I think Portland is particularly challenged. I know that, you know, many of you know I have a background in the Westland Wilsonville School District. And in that, and prior to that, I was in Salem Kaiser, and whether it was Salem Kaiser or Westland Wilsonville, we do not have the challenges in those two school districts that Portland faces around multiple languages. Portland has 80 different languages. I mean, that's enough to stagger many imaginations on just how do you, and many schools there are 20 different languages that teachers deal with in groupings of students. And so I think that part of, we have varying challenges across the state. And we'll hear from our smaller school districts on the eastern side of the state around the challenges that they have as well. But I think that part of what we basically are saying is that we are going to work towards assuring that every student graduates with high skills, particularly in reading and math and writing and science and social studies. And we're not only going to say we want that, but we're going to take a look at the data and see how we're doing. Now, I'd like to say that part of, I believe that success comes from both pressure and support. We're not going to get great schools just by beating people up. And we're also not going to get great schools by saying everything is fine and good job and keep working hard. And that's really where, you know, whether our low-performing schools package is funded or not, I think the strategies that we've defined in there is exactly the kind of thing that we need. We need accountability standards, and we need to have some accountability standards from the state. And typically, we've not had those other than kind of just wanting people to do better. And I think that holding schools accountable, holding school districts accountable, and not letting them get into multiple years of not doing well and begin to say, okay, let's break that cycle. Let's hold schools and school district, you are accountable for assuring that those children learn and learn enough to be able to do well in school. And if you're not, then here's some assistance from the state, here's some assistance from the school district, and we've got to it's almost like raising children, I hate to say it. But you know, you just got to come in and put your arms around them, raise your expectation, and go with it. Excuse my motherly advice. But, you know, that's I really do believe that. And I think for a long time we've just let them go. We've just been resigned to the fact that we have 10,000 kids a year dropping out of our school, and we've got X number of thousands of kids not learning to work at grade level, and we just ought not to do that anymore.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Gordon.
You're just so compelling, and I think a part of the letting go has also been letting go and not providing teachers with the quality of support that they need as well, because you gave the example of a teacher wanting to be effective but not knowing what to do. In every case like that, we should be providing support, helping teachers to be effective, not getting into this blame thing of, you know, bad teacher, but helping our teachers become more effective and getting them the resources so that they can be just that. That's another investment.
Mm-hmm.
That means targeted investment. And that's another initiative in the Department of Education package. It's the teacher mentors. And if you could talk about that just a little bit, about how it fits into this discussion, it would be helpful.
Thank you for the opportunity, Senator Gordley, Chair Hartung. Well, I have to say that we had considerable discussion and thought behind those three policy option packages this year, and we were very aware of the achievement gap, and we knew that we needed to do something around low-performing schools, dropout, and teacher mentor. Now, we didn't originally, when we went to the governor, when we were idealistic and young last fall, we'd asked for about $7 million in our policy option package for teacher mentor. We have the data that shows that we lose something like 40% of our new teachers within the first 3 to 4 years. And so we're constantly just bringing on new folks and losing them. And so just about the time they're at a place that they can move into a stronger role as a teacher, they get discouraged and they leave because they feel, and this is the word that I've heard teachers use, they feel incomplete. They've tried so hard, and they see the challenges as being very, just enormous. And they basically say, life is too short. I cannot do this. I'm going to go do something else. And they do. And what we need to do is we need to take these talented young people graduating from their teacher preparation programs and provide them a mentor to provide them the counsel, the support, and the structure to do better as teachers, because a first-year teacher, you do not know everything you need to know to face a class of 30 wiggly kids if you're teaching elementary, or 150 kids if you're teaching high school in your preparation programs. You learn a lot, but you don't know everything you need to know. And so our teacher mentor program that we've designed and have cut back to, I believe, about $1.5 million, will serve about